Thank you, Tom. Well, hello, my name is Volko. Until recently, I earned my living teaching U.S. intelligence analysts how to think, and as a part of that then, as now, I was asked to convey understanding about a step in game development that we called calibration. So what I'd like to do with you today is calibrate my own talk here quickly, is to first of all define what is it, talk about how we do it, and then as practitioners gathered, practice doing it. So there will be a participative part of this segment, and I thank you in advance for the active participation in which you will engage in a few minutes. So I have found with my students it's useful to make this analogy. A war game is not a musical instrument, but I want to talk for a bit about building harpsichords. I had a childhood friend, his father had as a hobby collecting antique instruments, and one year he built a harpsichord in his basement. And you can actually, I don't know if any of you have done this, I haven't, but apparently you can order kits of little wooden bits and assemble them into a harpsichord. And when you build it, of course, it looks quite beautiful. And how do you suppose it sounds? Well, probably not that beautiful, because it requires what? What? Before it requires a player. If you set the greatest player that Great Britain could produce of the harpsichord, if it was Trevor Pinnock, sat down at this freshly made harpsichord, what would that person achieve? No, you need to tune it. And tuning the harpsichord is a whole different specialty than building it and then playing it. It requires different tools. You have to bring in a professional, probably, to make sure that the components of this system are in harmony with one another. And only then can that system achieve its purpose, reproduce the great works of Bach or Handel. Make sense? So, okay. That's what we're going to focus on now, that tuning part, that calibration part of war game design. Anna this morning talked about achieving functionality of a war game. I think that's what I mean here also. So for that activity, that tuning or calibration to apply to the war games in which you're involved, I believe these premises have to hold. And I'm going to spend some time revisiting these premises and perhaps establishing this afternoon, so I'm not going to do that now. So if you don't accept that war games model complexity and that models simplify reality subject to their purpose, their purposeful simplifications, and that complex systems behave in part determined by some aspect of them called parameters, and we'll talk about what those are. If those premises don't hold for you, then you'll have to not accept anything I say until later and we can chat about it, or perhaps after my talk tonight. But those are necessary to make the point that calibration needs to be a part of all model design that is dynamic model design and development, I should say, development, and therefore of war games. Okay, calibration can be a somewhat subtle concept, at least it was for my students. And so I want to distinguish two different objectives within the development step, calibration and verification, if you like. We are trying to get a model or a game that is producing outputs that are interesting to our purpose. We'll talk a little bit about what interesting is, but that produces outputs that are, in effect, useful. That may be interwoven with or overlap with, but it's not exactly the same is ensuring that the model is true to life, is accurate, that it's converting, let's say, player inputs into game outputs that are somehow similar to the real world, right? That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the first thing. And to illustrate that distinction, because this whole one, I want to draw from what I happen to be consumed with right now, which is a commercial game about medieval operational warfare, Livonians versus Russians, it's called Nevsky. And the purpose of the model in the game is for there to be fun and strategic gameplay that somehow conveys to the players a sense of being there in the Middle Ages fighting these wars and these battles. Okay, so that's the purpose. And so in that context, if you've seen the movie, on the Russian side, there's a particular commander, Alexander, who is invited back to Novgorod as a prince, and he goes and battles the Teutonic knights, actually, well, knights who are Teutons, let's say, and wins, and it's a glorious victory, and he's sainted, and Russia goes on. So in that context, if I'm playtesting that game, that model, and I see that every time we play, as soon as Nevsky enters the fray, this great Russian leader, the Russians win. Okay, well, that is what happened. And maybe that is accurate. But it's not fun. It's not strategic gameplay if all we need to know is, well, as soon as Nevsky comes in, he cleans up and it's over. On the other hand, if when Nevsky comes into play, we find over the course of tests that he harms the Russians' cause. The Russians win some of the time, but they win less often. Well, that doesn't sound accurate because there's not too much dispute historically, maybe none, that Nevsky was indeed an effective military commander. He should add to the Russian cause, not subtract from it. However, so it's not really accurate. However, because we've got a range of wins and losses, we now may have at least a game that's interesting for our purpose. Now, and then what we can focus on is, well, what's going on here that we're getting results that don't seem to be accurate? So just an example of the difference. Right? And a way to think about that is if you have a dynamic model with outputs that are sort of arrayed along a spectrum, if you can do that, then usually for experimentational purposes, for learning something from our model, it's stuff in the middle somewhere. Either side might win depending on what happens, for example. Not one side always wins. That is more interesting. And we're looking for that in calibration. Okay, so for calibration, we want to do what? This is what we go about doing in terms of what are the actual steps, how to. We want to identify in our modeled system, what are the parameters, what are the aspects of it that are parameters that affect the outcome of the model, and then we want to attune them, we want to adjust them, we want to tighten the strings or loosen them. So this is, I think, exactly what the War Game Handbook is talking about within the development section. This is, you know, are our systems integrated and fit for purpose? I'm talking about the same thing here. And so the way to do that is experiment, right? We have to test. Because it's complexity. We don't necessarily know, well, if we now change this parameter from a 3 to 4, here's what will happen. That's not likely to be within our capacities if it's a complex adaptive system like all mass human endeavors like warfare. So we have to test. And we have to focus on that testing if it's calibration that we're after now. Well, what are the parameters that we want to experiment with? What do we want to tune? We have to identify what are those. All right, and that's what we're going to do together. So, I want to run an experiment now that is not a war game. In fact, it's not even a game. And the reason I want to do it this way is, in part, because I want to zero in on this nature of a dynamic model for a purpose with parameters. And this is a simple way to do it. And then talk later about, okay, how does this translate into war game development? And so I'm going to ask you in a few minutes to follow these rules. So take this in. We're all gamers. We're all practitioners. We can learn rules very quickly. So here they are. We're going to be tapping one another on the shoulder. Okay? We have all kinds of regulations in the United States, in the workplace, about what you're allowed to do and not to do and all that. And I can assure you all this complied with all of that. And hopefully it does here, too. So we're going to be tapping one another on the shoulder. And you're going to be keeping track of something here. And that is how many times you've been tapped. Maybe you've been tapped zero times. That's pretty easy. Once you've been tapped once by rule A, I'm asking you to immediately find three other people and tap them. Right? You were tapped once, you're going to tap three times. And that those people that you select to tap are not the person who just tapped you, whoever that is, not the most recent tapper of you, okay? And also not somebody. And what we're going to do is we're going to have two conditions for you as agents. We're going to either have you standing up or sitting down. So I'm going to ask you to stand up in a few minutes, too. Okay? So you're not to tap someone who is sitting down. I'll show you in a moment why and what that means. Okay, so that's rule A. So you're kind of counting, oh, did somebody tap me? Yes, I got to go tap somebody 3 times. But then there's rule B. The second time that you are tapped, this is pretty easy now. There's only two, you tap 0 times, once, twice. The second time you're tapped, here's what you're going to do. You are going to tap exactly one other person, otherwise following rule A. In other words, don't tap somebody who's sitting down. Don't tap somebody who's the last one who tapped you, but only one. So if you just get tapped 5 times, how many people are you tapping now? Well, if you haven't done it yet, one. Exactly one by rule B. Right? That's all you have to worry about. Have I already been tapped a second time? Yes. Now I'm going to tap one other. Okay. And then I want you immediately to sit down. So those are the rules. So don't worry about implementing the rules perfectly. It's actually not necessary for our experiment. I'm sure you'll implement them just as well as my students, huh? But that's what you're going to be keeping track of. Now, the next thing before we start, though, is I want to give you a sense of this as a model. So here it is. Let's pretend that we are studying disease, and this is our model of an epidemic and the spread of an epidemic. Okay? And so that's our purpose. We're going to try to model the spread of epidemics so as to compare, let's say, in future experiments. We're still at the development calibration time. This isn't the experiment on that. We're just calibrating this model. We're going to compare various measures otherwise simulated in this model of containing epidemics. That's our purpose. Okay. So you can see here, if you're standing up and you're tapping somebody, that represents what? You're alive and you're spreading disease, okay? And if you have been tapped enough times to sit down, that represents... You're dead. Sorry. Okay. And so we can actually give these, the parameters that I've highlighted here, I'm going to call them parameters. I'm going to split the parameters are, you know, how deadly is it? You know, how easily do you catch it? How deadly is it? And how long does it take once you've really got it before you die? And once you're dead, you can no longer spread it to anybody, right? All right. So we have 3 parameters. Okay. And so what we're going to do is we're going to run this experiment shortly. So what I want to hear from you now is, what do you think will happen? Who will give me a venture a forecast? I'm going to, by the way, there will be an initial stimulus, right? I'm going to have somebody tap somebody. If I could ask you to be the initial, right, typhoid jack or whatever, you're going to tap one person near you on the shoulder. Okay, so back there, there was a yes.
I think we're all dead.
You're all dead. How quickly? So, very quickly, meaning in the context of a 20-minute, but very quickly means only in 3 minutes, something like that. Okay, we're all dead. It's not going to die out. It's not going to peter out. Okay, and can we move? So, as you see, the rules are actually quite simple. I've tried to make them clear and strict, and yet within these rules, you have agency, don't you? There are some things you can do. I would encourage you not to go running around the room, but if it's not prohibited by the rules, keep it safe, keep it respectful. You know, et cetera. Americans, keep it within ADA, OSHA, no fear, and we'll see what happens. So this is a reason why it's actually a little bit hard to forget. Are we sure? How confident are we that we're all dead, and within a few minutes? Are we all dead within 3 minutes? Are we confident about that? Because you have agency. We have complexity here. Okay. Different question. For our purpose, what would be an interesting result? Sorry. Really fast and slows down. You said all die?
We don't all die.
We don't all die. Somebody survives. Yeah, we might have pockets. We might have safe things, kill everybody over here and so forth. And so there's some interesting things going on there. So this is something else I'm going to ask you to do. You're going to be counting, you know, I tapped. What am I supposed to do? I'm following the rules, which will stay up here. But observe the behavior of the system, because that's our actual purpose here, is to calibrate for some interesting results. I'd rather, ultimately, not have everybody die really quickly, because how am I going to, it's harder than to test how well a mitigation measure works if every time everybody dies really quickly. I'd like something in the middle. If it kind of petered out, that would be cool, or if there were some geographic effects, that would be really cool. I'm just wondering whether this aisle here in the middle is going to have any impact. I don't know. I have only run this experiment, here's a different parameter, with 24 or fewer participants. Now we have 200. I do not know what's going to happen. Okay, so. Let's proceed, and so I would like to ask everyone please to stand up. I am going to time this. Please watch what happens.
I will call a halt to it as necessary. Typhoid Jack, would you please begin and tap one shoulder? There we go.
Have you been tapped twice?
Rule B, you have to be tapped twice. Please watch what's happening here. This isn't a game. I've not asked you to survive, merely to execute. In the back of the room, heavy casualties, but not complete casualties in the front of the room. Okay, stop. So, we have very heavy casualties, as was forecast, and we have a few survivors. The disease maybe hasn't quite died out yet, and so you would maybe would actually wipe out. And the time, that time was a minute and 20 seconds. Did we have participants who were safe? Okay, so we had not all dead, but we had a few isolated survivors who had gotten lost. And so fairly, not exactly, but fairly close to, and thank you very much, you may sit down, I'll keep it sitting. Fairly close to the forecast results. It was excellent forecast, although rather quicker than was forecast because I had heard 3 minutes. And not exactly on because we did have a few isolated survivors. Okay, that's too extreme. That's too an extreme for this to be a calibrated model, because what we would like to do in the future is introduce some additional rules that we might simulate inoculation or public information campaigns or quarantines and or medical doctors to cure patients and the like. So we would like to have something where we could see, I mean, it's okay because like in time, we can say, well, how fast were we wiped out? It was a minute 20 seconds, and now we achieved a minute 25 seconds, that's good, that's a little bit. But wouldn't it be more ideal if we tweaked, if we tuned one or more of these parameters so that we would get to some interesting results in which we would have the spread of an epidemic, but it would peter out. So what would be a proposal? What would you change?
Only dead 50 plus.
The, to have what now at 50 plus?
50 and over, only dead then.
That if you're 50 plus, you only get, oh, so if you're, so we now have age, yes? That would that make it more or less of a spread of the epidemic? Would it make more or less lethal in the end?
We have survivors benefit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but wouldn't we make the epidemic more if lethal? You're saying 50 plus would survive more easily?
No, they have to be the first to be dead, so they are dead.
Oh, you have to go find them? That might slow things down because you have to find them. And that, okay, so in other words, that's a new rule. That's not a parameter, really. That's a new rule that says, C, if you're 50 plus, this, if you're not, right? But without even adding any rules, if you just had to change one of these three numbers, Phil?
The parameter I would change, as we discussed, is the mobility due to the new disease bearers become zombies and wander around the room all day, being forced to stay within a certain water, only a certain distance.
Yes. Well, we could do that very quickly with incubation. Right? That is to say, without even requiring a complicated new rule, I mean, you absolutely can use new rules to calibrate, I'm not trying to argue against that, but it may be simpler than that. In that, if we said, well, incubation is zero, as soon as you're tapped, you tap exactly one other, and then you sit down, you're dead. What do you think would happen? Yeah. We would expect it to burn out fairly quickly, right? In other words, the fact that you were able to wander around, not as a zombie, you're an infected person, but you're not dead yet. You may not know you're infected, right? And then you're communicating that disease to other people. Well, that's part of that is in this, what is the lethality and what is the incubation? If the incubation is zero, meaning I don't even have time to infect anybody. When I'm dead, no zombies, right?
Well, then, so that might be, we go to incubation zero, and we might decide then, we'd run an experiment, of course, and we might decide from that that it burns out too quickly. And so we might say, well, maybe incubation should be 0.5. Well, how would we do that? Well, you have a choice. Maybe you have agency. How much do you travel if you're feeling ill, right? And we let you decide sort of randomly. Come on.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Absolutely. So we have a room full of game designers. That's awesome. And I will tell you, we have played with this with things like that. We're saying, well, what about quarantine? Well, quarantine isn't just necessarily achieved easily. There's a reason you don't go into quarantine, because you have to go live your life, and we could model all that in. All right, so just a demonstration of what we might do to identify in this model with very simple rules, but a model of complexity in terms of parameters that we might tune even before we add rules to come up with a more accurate simulation, one that really models things like human behavior and people having to go to work and the like. Okay. So just to bring it back to war games, so what might be common parameters you would look for if what you're concerned with is calibrating your war game? I think these are some that I thought of. If you look in the Wargaming Handbook, there's a section called Wargame Variants that lists several of them. Anna talked about several of them this morning as well in terms of the different it's basically different aspects of combat or warfare that you're modeling that have some ability. They're expressed in some measurement usually, right? It might be number of actions in a turn, and it might be combat factors. These are things that really aren't directly necessarily related actually to the real world. They're related to each other, right? If I have a combat unit with a combat strength of 3 and it's attacking a defense strength of 2 and at 1-5 odds, a certain things happen. That's not the real world, right? That is how I have, if you want to say abstracted or represented in my model, the interactions in my model to represent interactions in the real world. And those interactions need to be brought in harmony. That's calibration. And so, for example, if it's a board game about catching a drug lord, and the drug lord has to gets to move around the map and run his drug empire and build his defenses, how many actions does the drug lord get for every set of actions by the hunters? That's just a representational, right? That's a parameter. In a matrix game, how many actions do you give? How many roles do you divide to the different sides? If you have a Baltic Crisis game and you have 8 players and 1 player is Russia and Russia gets 1 action and all the other 7 players all get 1 action, I'm not sure it would work very well, because somehow you've got to say, well, that in relation to each other, Russia is just going to be doing more stuff than Estonia is going to be doing in that sense. Okay. So, implications. What are your interesting outputs? That depends on the purpose of your game. What is the interesting range? What is not interesting? What is too extreme, perhaps? What are the parameters that you want to zero in on first to tune? And do you, therefore, and can you run experiments that are focused on tuning those parameters to obtain those interesting outputs? Do we have time for pro tip?
Yes.
Pro tip, we do have time. Okay, pro tip. As you're thinking about what is the next experiment going to be, how are we going to change those numbers or those parameters or whatever, overshoot the target. Because if you are right in terms of what the target really is, what the best setting for that parameter really is, you've now bracketed the problem. You've now reduced the uncertainty. You can zero in on it. You don't have to go further. If you were wrong, you have at least gone further toward your target than you would have otherwise if you tried to target on it. That's it. Thank you.